So Joseph's story comes from the book of Genesis, which is the very first book of the Bible. And he was the 11th son of the man named Jacob, whose name changed to Israel. And Israel is the same country, Israel, that we know of today in the Middle East. And Joseph was favored by his father because he came from his favorite wife. Yes, he had a favorite wife because he had more than one wife. And he happens to be the son of that wife. And so Jacob, his father, favored him over all the other sons. One thing about that, parents, you know that I know that it's wrong to favor a son or a daughter, right, over others. If it's in your heart, I realize that you can't hide it. If it is in your heart, if you favor a child, it's going to come out. So really the thing to do is not to favor from your heart. Somebody asks you, don't answer that question, because once that gets in your head, then it becomes it, right? But anyway, Jacob made a mistake, Israel made a mistake, so Joseph was a favored son. And because of that, because of the jealousy from the brothers decided to get rid of him by selling him as a slave to the Egyptians. And so, you know the story, right? He goes to a foreign country, and he becomes a slave to a man named Potiphar. But even though he was in a very tough condition, he works hard. Maybe he thought that maybe this is God's will, maybe something good will come out of it, right? Toughen up, and then I'll just make the best of it. And so he did. And the result of that is what? That he gets imprisoned. Probably because he was a very, well-mannered and highly capable slave, that Potiphar's wife had a thing for him, and so he gets wrongly accused, and he goes to jail because of that. And so it goes from bad to worse. So Joseph is not getting really a break at this point. And so he becomes a slave. And what's a slave? Slave is somebody basically who cooks, who cleans, and who farms for you. Basically what your mom does for you, right? Except, of course, in this case, they were forced to do it rather than doing it out of love, just like our moms. And so Joseph becomes a slave, and even there, right, he works hard, and again, he gets accused, and he goes into prison. And by now, you're thinking, right, if I were Joseph, I'll be thinking, you know what, forget this. Forget following after God, because look where that got me, right? I'm going to do my own thing. But he doesn't. Even in the prison, the Bible says that Joseph worked hard. He was faithful. And the warden saw that he was faithful, and he put him in charge. And finally, the break that he's been waiting for comes. The Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, has a dream, and nobody could interpret his dream. Nobody knew what that meant. But Pharaoh is given that special ability to be able to interpret people's dreams. And so the king found out, and the king calls him out of prison, and so tells him what the dream was, and then the Pharaoh, Joseph, interprets Pharaoh's dream for him. And you know the rest of the story, right? That, you are wise enough to be able to interpret the dream that none of my other wise men could interpret, so I'm going to make you the prime minister of Egypt. You're going to be second only to me, and you're going to run the country for me. And so now, all of a sudden, from prison to the throne, Joseph goes. But the story doesn't end there, right? He had lived happily ever after? Not quite yet. So it doesn't end there. His brothers, 11 brothers who ditched him, who sold him as a slave many years ago, come to Egypt to get food, not knowing that Joseph is a prime minister. And so there's a tussle back and forth and back and forth, and they didn't know why Joseph was doing what he was doing. But finally, Joseph reveals his true identity to his brothers. And at this point, how are the brothers? How do they react? Were they happy to see their brother? No, they're horrified. Because they remember, right? Many years ago, they sold him. They ditched him, and they lied to their father. And here he is, standing in front of them. Now he's the authoritative figure, and he can do whatever he wants with them. And so, at that point, what does Joseph do? Joseph had this in mind, in which we read today. And that is Genesis 50. This must be from God. Right? I can't understand how a person could have this kind of perspective in a situation like that. He said, you, brothers, intended to harm me, but God intended it for good. You meant to harm me, right? You meant to hurt me, but God meant it for good. So from this story, I'm going to just make one truth statement, and then I'm going to give two reasons as to why that is true. Statement is this: God lets us have, or God lets bad things happen to those who love him. That's it. God lets bad things happen to the good people, people who love him. Why? Number one, to mold and shape them for the greater thing. And then number two, to help us see Jesus more clearly. Okay, so let's go one by one. Let me defend my statement. God lets bad things happen in our lives. Now, there are some adults, right, that come from a certain tradition, I'm sure even in this congregation, that if we are good, if we do good, and if we stay away from bad things, God's only going to bless us and only good things are going to happen to our lives. Right? If you're good, if you do good, and if you live a very, you know, good life, nobody can be sinless. Of course, we sin here and there. But I mean, overall, I mean, if you're trying really, really hard and you're praying and doing the right thing, then God's going to bless you and he's going to block bad things from happening to you. That's called prosperity gospel. And that's not biblical. Because look what happened to Joseph. Joseph has no, I mean, he was a sinner, right? Because the Bible says everybody was a sinner, so he wasn't sinless. But we don't see any kind of visible sin that he's harboring in his heart when all of this happened. And as a matter of fact, the reason why he got into prison and so on is because he was trying to do good and be good. But these bad things were happening to him regardless. So there goes that theory out the window, right? That if you are good and if you do good, then God's only going to let good things happen to you. Not true. Not biblical. However, God was using these circumstances really to mold and to shape him to fit the task that he would use for greater good. So, with that thought, right, make this link. It's not always that because we have done something wrong that God disciplines us. Right? Think about the word discipline. You know this verse, right? God disciplines all whom he loves, right? Whom he has called as his children. So God disciplines his people. So we think of it as, okay, God punishes even his children, which is really not wrong, right? But when do you think God disciplines us? When does God punish us or correct us? It's when we do wrong, right? When we do something wrong, God doesn't want us to go that way and ruin our lives. And so for our joy and our happiness, he's going to correct us, let hard things happen, and he's going to bring us back so that we are not going to go down that road, right? Just like we do as parents. When we see our children going the wrong way, I mean, we're not going to say, oh, just go ahead and do it, learn the hard lesson. No, we try to bring them back. We discipline them, we ground them, we take away their smartphones or what have you, right? Whatever to discipline and bring them back. That's what we normally think. But did you know that's not always when God disciplines us? That we could be following after God, we could be obedient to God, we could be doing everything right, and God still disciplines us. You see, we think of discipline, I think, as correcting. But not always. Discipline also could be training, right? When do athletes train? When do they discipline themselves? It's when they're what? Training for the Olympics. Are they doing something wrong? Is that why they're getting disciplined? If the coach is pushing his favorite player, let's say, his best player, right? Why is he doing that? It's not because he's doing something wrong. No, it's because he is doing something right that he is being disciplined, because a coach knows that he can be better because he sees the talent in him. And that is often what God does with his children. When God disciplines us, it's not when hardships come, when things go wrong in your life, it's not because, right? Our instinct is what, right? When something goes wrong, right? We have a flat tire, right? Or something big happens in your house, right? Like your furnace goes out. What are you thinking? What is the instinct? What have I done wrong, right? I must have done something wrong. Am I like, and you start looking at it and God is punishing me for something, right? God's trying to get my attention. But what I'm saying is that's not always the case. That you could actually be right in the middle of God's will, and God is disciplining you anyway to make you better, to mold you and shape you so that you can do something that you could not do before. Prime example is that God disciplines somebody that we would never have thought that he would discipline. God disciplines his own son, Jesus. You know that Jesus was disciplined by his father? Doesn't that sound wrong? What, Jesus? I thought it was God. How does God get disciplined? Doesn't make sense. But Hebrews 5:8 says this, although he was a son, talking about Jesus, he learned obedience through what he suffered. Isn't that weird? Jesus learned obedience? I thought he came prepackaged, right? He's the Son of God. He's perfect. How does he learn obedience? This is what John Piper says about this. He said that it means that he moves. Let me go back. It's not that he is going from disobedience to obedience, but that he is moving from one degree of obedience to another as he grew. He is learning at each stage the actual implementation of this obedient heart in acts of obedience. And his suffering brought him a greater understanding of what it means to obey his father. So God wasn't disciplining his father because he was imperfect or because there was something wrong with him and he needs to fix him. No. It's one degree of perfection to another, if you can understand that. Jesus was already perfect, but he learned something, even though he is omniscient, maybe through experience, how to truly be obedient in his suffering. So one degree of understanding to another degree of understanding. And so even Jesus Christ, God's son, was disciplined by his father. So how much more us, right, mere human beings, would God discipline us? John 16:33, I have told you these things, Jesus said, so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. That's really weird if you think about it. It says, I have told you that these things, that so that in me you may have peace. See, so he said, you may have peace, right? But he says, right after that, in this world you will have trouble or tribulation. Tell me, how do those things go together? When you are troubled, do you have peace? Right? He says, you'll have peace. You may have peace, but in this world, you'll have tribulation. You'll have trouble. I mean, immediately, it's almost as Jesus just forgot what he said, the sentence before, that you'll have peace, and then you're going to have tribulation. So you're going to have peace and tribulation at the same time. How does that go? It doesn't go, if this world is all there is. But it goes, it makes perfect sense if you're a Christian, if you're a believer of Christ. You will have trouble, but in the midst of the storm, you will have Jesus, myself, right, who is the author of this storm that you are in, so you can have peace in me, even though your world is crumbling away. Okay? That's what Jesus is saying. So, here is the thing. This is a biblical theme that comes up over and over and over. And so this is one thing that I want you to take away, right? Sometimes he will let us lose our job. And it's not anything because you have done wrong. Sometimes our children will run away from our home. And parents, what do we do? The first thing we do is we blame ourselves. Where have I gone wrong? It might not be anything that you have done wrong. You might have done everything right and your children still will go their own way, right? Sometimes we are going about and we're going somewhere to help somebody, right? Go grocery shopping for somebody, and then we just happen to slip and fall and break our ribs, right? I don't know if that's what you were trying to do, but that happens, right? Last time I got a ticket, I was going somewhere to help somebody, you know, and then somebody rear-ended me when I was going somewhere to help somebody. That happens. And he's not doing that to punish you. No, he's actually trying to make you and mold you and shape you so that you can do greater things that you could not do before. So let's go now into the reason why. Why does God treat us this way? Two reasons, right? I said, number one, because, first of all, he's molding us, he's shaping us to do something that we could not do before. Let's read the rest of Genesis 50:20, okay? And this is what he says. As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive. So what was the purpose of Joseph's suffering? Right? You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good in order to do what? So that my character will build? So that I'll be a better person, Joseph says? No. It's so that many people will be kept alive through God using me in this event. So the purpose really wasn't Joseph, right? The purpose was to save many lives through Joseph. And Joseph was simply an instrument that God used, and he had to go through suffering in order to do that. So almost always, right, because of our selfish nature, if God disciplines us, yes, because he's molding me and making me a better person so that I'll have more joy, yada, yada, that's all true, right? But there's a greater purpose. It's not always about you. It's almost actually never about you, right? It's about the masses. It's about the people. God used Joseph, even his suffering, so that other people will benefit. And you know, that's been the principle that the Bible drills over and over and over. Have you noticed? Whoever was used greatly by God, right, in the Bible, almost, right, always suffered greatly. One man suffers so that many people will benefit. You just name one, right? Name any Old Testament or New Testament saints. You look at the apostles. They suffer so that the whole world will be evangelized. You look at the prophets. Some of them were killed, right? Maimed, had their head chopped off, right? Put in oil and burnt alive and so on and so forth. So that what? They will be the light of the world, you know, yeah. And tell people of their sins and so on so that they will benefit from it. It's never about just us, our future, our character building. No, it's always about the masses. God has a concern about the whole world. And of course, David, for example, another example, right? How much he suffered at the hands of Saul, King Saul, even after David was confirmed to be the king of Israel. But he had to go through that suffering so that he will do much good for the nation and really for the world later on. And of course, the best example being Jesus. One man must suffer so that many men will be saved, right? A high priest said something like that without knowing what he was saying, but literally, that's what it was. So, here's the thing. Young people and older people, right? But especially the young people. Have you ever went to a, you know, retreat or heard a message that, you know, gives a great testimony, pastor or whatever, right? How God used him. And then at the end, he goes, do you want to be used of God, right? You pray, God, please use me. Just make me a vessel. I'll do anything you want me to do, right? And you just, yes, I want to go, right? I want to make the difference for the world. When you say yes, you have to be prepared to suffer. Okay? If you're not willing to suffer, don't say yes, because you will. In every case, people that have been used by God invariably suffered. That is a principle of God. So before you raise your hand, I'll go anywhere, I'll do anything, God, just use me, and all you're thinking about the glory, right? Prosperity, and God's going to change lives, and everything's going to turn, and so on. But no, before that, you're going to suffer. That's exactly what God told Paul, right? I will show you how much you must suffer for my name's sake. Before you influence millions, and if not billions through his writing, I'll show you how much you must suffer for my name. But don't let that discourage you from saying yes. Because when we say yes, God, I know that I may suffer. Actually, I know that I am going to suffer. But I'll say yes to your calling anyway. And you know what God does? That he shows us grace. He shows us grace enough to overcome not only our suffering, but give us that joy that we have not felt before from the world. Even in the midst of suffering, we get to know Christ in a way that we have never known him, and we see him in a fresh perspective and all of life, so that the joy comes from within. When Paul prayed three times, right, remove this thorn in the flesh from me, and Jesus said, my grace is sufficient for you. My grace is sufficient. My grace is enough for you. In other words, what he was saying is, no, Paul, I'm not going to listen to your prayer. Why? I'm going to let you continue to suffer because it is actually good for you. It's good for the world. Right? If you ever read the New Testament, those words, right, jewels from the epistles, right? How often did we clutch onto those words? And Paul, you understand. Right? You know my pain. You know my suffering. How? Because he went through it. One man suffered so that many may benefit from it. So why do bad things happen to good people? It's because God molds and shapes those good people for the good of many. But that is not it. There's a second reason to that. And that is, really, ultimately, that is not the ultimate. Ultimately, Joseph's story is really to bring our focus back to Jesus. The better Joseph, I can say. Jesus is the better Joseph. Listen, if this is kind of where I left the message, where I ended the message, then all you heard is, okay, let's be like Joseph. Okay, when bad things happen, persevere, right? Just stay in there because good things will happen to you and good things will happen to other people. That's just a moralistic message, right? You could hear that from any religion. Just suck it up, right? Work hard and keep being faithful and God will see to it that you get blessed. Prosperity gospel all over again. But that's not the gospel message. Gospel message is always, right, ending with Christ. Jesus alone is the good news, and he must get the glory in the end. So have you seen the similarity, if you know the both stories, right? Have you noticed the similarities between Joseph's story and Jesus' story? They're uncanny how much they're alike. And after a while, you got to conclude that, oh, it's not about Joseph. It's actually about Jesus. Joseph is really leading us to think about this Messiah who would go through almost exactly the same thing later on in Jesus. So think about it. They're both betrayed by the people that were closest to him. Right? One by the brothers and one by the disciples. They both suffered even though they were very good. Immensely they suffered. They were both accused falsely. Joseph and Jesus, right? They both were used to save many people at their own cost. Okay? Of course, Jesus suffered more because he ultimately died on the cross. And then they were both elevated to the highest position after their suffering. Joseph to become the prime minister and Jesus regaining his glory as a second person of the Trinity. You see the similarities? So the story is ultimately not about Joseph. Let's be like Joseph. Let's persevere. Then we can have success later on. That's not the point. The point is, I see Jesus in this. I see Jesus in Joseph's life. Oh, Jesus is the one. Jesus is the one who has done this for us. You know who you and I should identify with? Not Joseph, but Joseph's brothers. Right? You and I are like Joseph's brothers. How are we? Come on, Facebook, right? Instagram, right? When you see somebody at somewhere, some exotic place, what are you thinking? I wish I were there. Why does she get to be there, right? It's not fair. What are we doing? We're jealous, right? We're envious, and we would cut them down if we have to. Yeah, but, right? And we come up with all kinds of dirty things about her, right? Because we're jealous. I mean, you and I should see ourselves in Joseph's brothers and not in Joseph. Oh, yeah, I remember when I was nickel and somebody persecuted me and I was good, so I was like Joseph. No. Right, that's one time out of 100 times that you might have succeeded. But all of the other times, 99 times, you failed. I failed. You and I are like Joseph's brothers. Right? Joseph is like Jesus. And that's what we ought to identify with. And just like the brothers did, and just like the disciples did, we ought to bow, right, at the feet of Jesus, confessing, Jesus, nothing good in me. Right? My effort won't get me anywhere. I can never do what you have called me to do. I need you, Jesus. I need you to forgive me again for that same sin umpteenth time. Right? I come to you. Right? I receive you again, again, and again. I commit myself to you, receive me, cleanse me, use me, let suffering come, but only let me see you in it. I'll be okay. That's the good news of Jesus Christ. Okay. Let's pray.